It's called The Safety Trap by Spencer Corson. We're going to take your calls with him in just a moment. And if you have a story of some safety issue, check in with us for sure. And welcome back. George Norrie with you. Spencer Corson with us. His book, The Safety Trap. Spencer, what advice would you give to people who are walking alone on a street at night and they hear footsteps? They know someone is behind them, maybe 20, 30 feet.
Well, if someone is 20 or 30 feet behind them, just hearing footsteps behind you does not necessarily mean that that person is a predator. But there's absolutely nothing wrong with taking, precautions. Maybe you want to cross the street. Maybe you want to turn around and remove their anonymity by saying that you absolutely know who they are by looking them in the face, or maybe even going so far as to say, hey, how's it going? So that they know for a fact that you have removed their anonymity, that you could identify them, that you could pick them out of a lineup. There's also nothing wrong with just taking out your cell phone and either calling someone so that there's always strength in numbers. And with today's digital communications, no one actually needs to be alone. But if you truly feel that your life is on the line, there's absolutely nothing wrong with, in that exact moment, calling the police for support.
That's a good point. And that's truly a good point. And it's remarkable, isn't it? There's a message here to be safer than sorry, right?
100%. We can no longer afford to live in a world where we simply hope that nothing will happen and then solely rely on the first responders to save us once something does. Everyday safety requires the participation of everyone, and that participation begins with ourselves.
What do you do about road raging? What's your advice there?
Well, there's a very interesting dynamic with road rage. There are people who express a threat, and there are people who pose a threat, and that is never more clear than on the road. You know, let's say you cut someone off accidentally as you're merging into traffic, and they start honking their horns and screaming, and they give you the finger, and they scream that they want your soul to go to hell, and then they speed off past you. Well, that person has expressed a threat. They have chosen words which alarm mm-hmm. over actions that harm. Now, if someone instead of expressing a threat, they decide to pose a threat, which means they
chase you.
They don't say anything, but they go like white knuckled and glared as they pull in behind you and start following on your way home. Well, that's something you need to absolutely take seriously, because that person is engaged in predatory behavior.
Mm-hmm.
What you want to do, maybe if they're following you, maybe you take three lefts or you take three rights to see if they are in fact following you. And then what you want to do in that exact moment is get on the phone to the police, give them your exact location, give them their description, give them your description, and follow their advice, because they will absolutely send help to rescue
you. Yeah, because that's a dangerous situation. Did you see the Russell Crowe movie Unhinged yet?
I have not, but I am familiar with the premise.
Okay, yeah, you've got to watch that, especially with your background. But it's exactly what you've just said. And this is a guy that a lady honked and honked and honked at, and he went ballistic. He went crazy.
But I imagine in that particular case, the woman did not drive to the nearest police department.
Nope, nope, nope. And then he followed her, and it was just, it's a great movie. I'm not going to give the ending away, but you're right. It's good advice.
Yeah, I think in all of these cases, again, it was one of those things like, we don't want to, our willingness to defend ourselves should always be stronger than our unwillingness to offend another. And participating in our own protection is a priority. Being polite is a courtesy.
Let's go to the phones. Lots of them are rolling in this hour. We're with Spencer Corson, his book, The Safety Trap. And what possessed you to write the book, which was a great idea, by the way?
Thank you. Being a protector is a craft I have honed my entire life, and it was a great experience. Military, government, private sector, public sector service. But the tragedy at Sandy Hook was a real turning point for me. Both
my
parents were teachers, and when you have family and friends reaching out to you for help, you really want to do all you can to be of service. And what I kind of realized in that moment was that my particular skill set was predominantly employed by the top 1% of the world. And while not everyone will know the luxury of having their own protection detail, every single one of us deserves to be protected. And putting, you know, my experience into an easily digestible format to help others ensure the certainty of their own safety was something I felt compelled to do.
All right. To the phones we go. First-time caller Aaron in Keystone Heights, Florida. Welcome to the program. Hi, Aaron.
Hello, George. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate all your kindness to all your guests and callers over the years. It's kind of created a second family for me. And I had a story that I wanted to tell about safety.
Love to hear it. Go ahead.
All right. So me and my dad and my brothers were out shooting one day. We were using BB guns. We're kind of out at the edge of the town in the woods. And we would shoot down into this canal. And then all of a sudden, there was a massive explosion on the other side of the canal. I mean, it was like 4 to 8 stories high.
Oh, my God.
It looked like it was so powerful. It had the shape of a mushroom. And then my dad, you know, he's a Vietnam vet. And I guess probably from his experience or his training, he just started yelling to all of us, like, get down, take cover, take cover. And then, like, the secondary piece of stuff flew across the canal and blew up, you know, close to us across the canal. But I just thought it was a good story of how his instincts kind of kicked in, like, right away. He was ready for that because he'd probably seen it or been trained in it.
And he knew.
We all did. We started running and, like, hid behind the truck.
Yeah, did you ever find out what blew up?
We did, yeah. There was an article in the newspaper in the next couple of days that they had taken a bunch of toxic waste from local school laboratories and were disposing of it by basically blowing it up. And they didn't check to see if there was anybody across.
Oh, my God. If you guys were any closer, you could have been really hurt.
For sure, yeah. I mean, it was a serious explosion. I mean, it looked like anything you would see on the movies, nothing short of that.
That brings up the question, Spencer, and thank you for that, about safe havens, places, again, for people to be able to escape to at any given time, whether it's weather-related or crime-related.
Yeah, absolutely, and especially if you're out in the open like that and, you know, there is an explosion and you're worried about debris coming down or what have you, just even if you can identify a tree to get behind or any kind of, you know, divot in the ground, which may give you just a little bit of protection. I remember learning in ranger school that just getting behind just a little bit of cover, whether that be ground clearing or rocks or trees or whatever, can increase your survivability by up to 70%. But you have to know, you have to have a plan, you have to know where to go, and you have to know how to get there, because when moments matter most, you do not want to be going through that decision tree process. You want to already have that plan in place.
What do you recommend, Spencer, for people who generally will let their guard down because things are lull and all of a sudden it's a false safety net?
Well, that is the essence of the safety trap, right? I mean, sometimes feeling safe is the most dangerous thing we do, because when our vigilance goes down, our risk exponentially goes up. And so what I always say is that, you know, we have a tendency, especially in America, to live on the fringe of the pendulum swinging between complacency and hypervigilance, between nothing is going to happen to patting down grandma at the ballpark. But all most of us really need is a healthy sense of skepticism and a moderate dose of vigilance. And because those two things are just a very small price to pay for the liberties and the freedoms which flow so freely from peace.
Next up, we go to David in New Mexico. Welcome to the program. Hi, David.
Hey, gentlemen. Got a question and a follow-up question if you have time.
Sure.
Hey, George, you're always mentioning Russell Crowe. I hung out with him every day, all day long, for 3 weeks a few years back.
He's a great guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he sure is. They were filming that 310 to Yuma remake here in
right.
When I was working on that.
Great movie.
So I was working with him every day, for him and Christian Bale as well.
That's cool. Both great actors.
Yeah. The question I have for Spencer. Now, you've given a lot of great information, but there was one thing that you said that I wanted to question you on, and I say this, I was also a victim of an armed home invasion of escapees, prison escapees, when I was 8 years old, and it turned violent, and I ended up testifying and sending those guys back to prison. But something you said about a couple things, but the main thing in particular was, if I'm paraphrasing you correctly, you had said they're not shooting at you, so run away. And my thought immediately turned to scenarios like there was a couple churches in Texas. There was one where there was a guy inside shooting up many, many people, and he came out, and a guy who was not being shot at shot the guy and ultimately took him down. And then there was the other scenario in a Texas church where there was a homeless type guy that came in and was shooting people, and somebody that he was not shooting at shot and took him down. So I wanted to give you a chance to clarify that. That was in the context of the being in a bank scenario. Mm-hmm. If somebody mm-hmm. comes in armed and is telling you to get down and get over there and that kind of stuff, whether you should do anything with your concealed carry or not. And so that's that question. And if you got time, I got a follow up for you.
Okay, let's let him answer this first one first. Go ahead,
Spence. Sure. So what I will say in both of those church shootings, which I also go through both of those scenarios in the religion chapter of the book, is that those two incidents, the individuals who thwarted the attacker were armed church security, so they were not participating in the prayer. They were not participating in the process. They were the sheep.
They were doing their job.
And I also, someone on Twitter just actually said something similar, citing some case law that you do have the right to protect another if you're a concealed carrier. You absolutely do have the right to protect your life or the life of others. But what I also said was that you are not going to be free from prosecution if you harm another while you're trying to help that person. So police officers have have protection under the law in doing their job to ensure the public safety. A concealed carrier does not. So like I said earlier in the bank robbery scenario, even in that church shooting scenario, if they had missed the perpetrator and hit the priest, they're going to go to jail for killing the priest.
Sure. But they didn't, and they came across as heroes, though, didn't they?
Say again, sir?
They came across as heroes because of what they did.
They came across as heroes because they were successful in their action, but those were also people who were in the mindset to be in a protector frame of mind, which is a completely different one of the best arguments against thinking that the everyday civilian can use a handgun to thwart a violent attack is to see that same civilian try to take a selfie of a celebrity using their cell phone, because you know they may have the ability to take a picture of their breakfast under ideal circumstances with precision that would be worthy of being hung in the MoMA, but as soon as they see Taylor Swift enter the room, they get all fidgety, their fine motor function deteriorates. So unless you're a shooter who is putting 1,000 rounds down range a day, I would not consider yourself to be of the
prolific to do that.
Exactly.
All right, let's go back to David for a second question. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, point of clarification. One of the Texas churches I was citing, this was a non-involved person. He lived several houses away from the church and heard the gunshot.
Heard the shooting, yeah.
Saw the shooting going on, went inside, got his rifle, and took the guy out. And the other situation was there was some escapees in Kingman or something like that, Arizona, and abducted some a couple in a camper trailer, RV, whatever, and, had the gun, come with us. And what they're desperate, so they just in cold blood kill the people when they weren't necessarily threatening to begin with. And that's what I was wondering about, what you thought of my argument that if somebody kidnaps you or false imprisons you by force, in my view they've given you the right to use deadly force to protect yourself, because you never know what they're going to do to you.
Oh, no, that's entirely different. I think Spencer
100%.
Would agree.
You absolutely have my sole hesitance in telling people, yes, go be do your civic duty to protect others, is that you are not protected under the law if something goes bad. So if you are absolutely certain in your skill set and you have a good lawyer and you can afford,
self-defense, you're going to get off okay.
Another, but to, you know, actually, you know, I mean, taking a life is not an easy thing to do, and especially if it's a life that you didn't mean to take. So be very, 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 very careful if you intend to go down that course of action.
David, thanks. Danny in Jefferson City, Missouri, welcome to the program. Hi, Danny.
Yeah, hi, George. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, thank you, sir.
Yeah, I was kind of touching base on a couple things that he said, and I was listening to the other callers as well. What you guys are talking about is Tennessee versus Gardner. Tennessee versus Gardner basically says that if a person's running into a crowd and, you know, they've already caused a threat, and, you know, you've got to, you know, that they're going to cause bodily harm or even death to another individual, you can't take that person out. At the same time, you know, accidental homicide, the guy that you're talking to, he was talking about, well, you know, if your bullet passes and hits the priest, you know, you're going to go to prison. Well, that's not quite the case. What we're talking about is accidental homicide. And accidental homicide, you know, if a bullet travels through a suspect that's robbing the store and hits the store clerk, it's ruled as accidental homicide, and ain't nobody going to go to jail.
Is it manslaughter?
I'll tell you right now, it's really going to depend on the circumstance. It's going to depend on how well trained you were, how much time that you can show how proficient you were. And not only that, but that doesn't also, you may not go to jail, but you're definitely going to get sued civilly.
You may not go
to jail, but you're going to go bankrupt.
If the family wanted to go that far.
Right, exactly.
You know, talking about, I mean, I've got 420 hours of criminal law. I've dealt with high profile people as well. Tony Hawk, Milner Hotel, I flew down there out of Oklahoma to deal with him. He done $30,000 worth of damage. The Milner Hotel, I was complimented two times by TPD, one time by Internal Affairs, one time by the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department, offered a job with both. So I'm right up on my game.
I'm not questioning your bona fides, but what I am saying is that, and I absolutely agree, that you have the right to defend yourself and the lives of others if there is a reasonable threat of death or bodily harm.
We're going to come back and take some final calls, Spence, in a moment. Thanks for everybody calling. We've got more to go when we come back on Coast to Coast AM, so don't touch your dial. Next hour, Ross Ellison and David Weatherly join us with their latest work, Haunted Prisons. Oh, that tells you everything we're going to be talking about, so get ready for that. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, back with Spencer Corson. His book is called The Safety Trap, and we are talking about his ability as a security expert to help people. Spence, we've all heard about fight or flight. What do you recommend?
I think it's very important to understand if you are fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. The problem with fight or flight is that it's not our choice. It's a biologically ingrained response mechanism that has a lot of basis in childhood trauma. So I think the best thing you can do is put yourself in a mental projection. You want to think about what you want to do. You want to think about where you're going to go. You want to think about how you're going to get there, because the more you can, you know, they talk about this in sports psychology, where you can like visualize the win or visualize the ball coming over the plate and then swinging the bat or running into the end zone. Mm-hmm. The more you can visualize psychologically what you want your body to perform, the more in tune your body will be to perform once called upon. The last thing you want is a legitimate trial by fire to be forced to act as you would want to act.
Good point. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Mike in Greensboro, North Carolina. Welcome to the program. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Yes, hello. I wanted to tell a particular story about where an Uber driver dropped me off in one of the roughest parts of St. Petersburg at almost 2:00 in the morning. And I was very fortunate that nothing happened. But basically, my instinct was that I got to get out of this as soon as possible, because, I mean, obviously it was a very bad area. And there were, you know, people, cars pulling up in and out, homeless people. And, you know, very little scares me because I've been going out late at night by myself for many, many years in some pretty sketchy, seedy, shady areas. But, you know, what I did is I stayed still and I, you know, immediately put it in for a new Uber app to come pick me up. And when the second Uber driver came and picked me up, she said, you know, that the Uber driver purposely dropped me off at that section because it was dangerous and probably wanted to try to get me jumped and so forth. And, she said, you know, I drive in a lot of sketchy areas late at night, and I never pull directly into a parking space so I can get out if need be. So that was just part of my, you know.
Did you ever call Uber on that one, Mike?
I did. I went to a diner, and I did the – they have a thing where you can report a safety issue. And I said, this guy put me in a very dangerous spot. And, you know, I don't know if they did anything, but they refunded the fare and they said he's going to be investigated. So
now, generally, though, I'm just curious. When you call for Uber, you have to put in where you're coming and where you're going. Did you do that? And he just took you to this other spot?
Well, this is exactly what happened is that I had put in to go to a specific location, and it turned out that the spot had turned out to be closed, even though on the internet it said it was
open. Uh-huh. Okay.
So, you know, I said, well, you know, it was kind of a desolate street. There wasn't any other stores or restaurants or bars open. It was kind of late at night already.
You gave him the option, right?
Yeah. And he drove me, you know, I noticed he was driving me into a pretty rough neighborhood. I could tell by, you know, just various businesses and stores and people. And I wasn't familiar with the area, so I didn't see like a hospital or police station or firehouse because I know they're open 24 hours. So I said, all right, just drop me off here at this convenience store. And, you know, the second Uber driver that picked me up about 10 minutes later said, you know, he could have taken you to a safer spot that was open. Instead, he drove you to this area on purpose that was a known drug area, and there had been a couple shootings there, a couple people gotten killed, and that's like one of the roughest neighborhoods of St. Petersburg. So she said he was probably just mad, did that in like retaliation because you were making him late for his next run. So
interesting. Well, thanks for that story, Mike. What about if you're in a foreign country, Spencer, and you're kind of trapped?
Well, overseas travel is a very interesting it's really its own kind of it requires its own level of preparation. One of the things I recommend that everyone first do is register with the Smart Traveler program with the State Department, which is a free service which allows our U.S. embassies to track your overseas travel in case something like protest or any kind of political unrest should occur. But I think there's a couple different things that you should always do before you travel overseas. One is to understand what the emergency phone codes are for that country, because 911 works in America, but it doesn't work the world over. The second thing is to understand how your phone works overseas. Does it automatically include the +1 or the 001 or the 101 or however it is that your phone needs to call those local numbers? And you want to have those numbers pre-programmed in before you go. And then the other thing is to, like I said before, identify those safe havens. Where are the Western hotels that you can get to? What are the transportation logistics like? Can you use a hotel car or are you forced to use public transportation? It's all about where you're going to go, what are you going to be doing, and what are you going to be doing when you get there? And then, you know, there's nothing wrong with going to the State Department website and seeing what the overseas travel advisories say and what they warn you about so that you can make the most informed decisions before you arrive in that country.
That's smart. Mike in Denver, take it away. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, George. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure thing.
And Spencer, first of all, I wanted to thank you so much for your service and also for writing this book. You know, we've had two mass shootings here just in Colorado in the past couple of months. You know, the first being the Boulder, Colorado supermarket shooting, and then this past weekend, most recently with a shooting that left six people dead at a birthday party in Colorado Springs. So I think that this book is very pertinent to the times, and I appreciate you writing it. Thank you.
My pleasure, sir. Thank you.
Okay, simple. It's a little compliment every once in a while never hurts, Spencer, does it?
It never does.
We're with Spencer Corson. The book is called The Safety Trap. What are you working on next? What's your next project?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, the security business has been booming even during the COVID, with all the litigation support and the threat management work that my firm provides. And right now we're in full publicity mode for The Safety Trap, and we look forward to getting out and doing the book signings and the speaking engagements.
Super.
And connecting with the audience, and really looking forward to doing all of it.
Let's go out to Iowa. Al's with us, first-time caller. Al, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Good morning, George and Spencer.
Good morning.
Great show. Now, my wife and I, we have run over-the-road truck for 46 years, nearly 5 million miles. It's vigilance, vigilance, vigilance.
Yes, sir.
Be aware of your surroundings, and always look for an exit. When we sit in a restaurant, one of us keeps an eye on the door and the exits.
That's very smart. You know, I would wish our government leaders, whenever they go into other countries, would have an exit plan, Spencer. They don't seem to have that.
They don't. And to Al's point about vigilance, and I'm sure if he's done 5 million miles across the country, he'll agree with this. You know, in leadership, there's a tenet which says you need to anticipate the needs of others, but when driving, you need to anticipate the idiocy of others. But so much of that comes down to vigilance. You know, there's a thing when we're driving, because we're more familiar with the realistic risk we could face. So we're more vigilant to the person who's changing lanes without blinking their lights, who's speeding up behind us, who's bobbing and weaving in and out of traffic. And we put those safeguards in place to help us stay safe. And if we can just apply that same mindset when we're driving to our everyday lives, I think so many more of us would be able to ensure the certainty of our own safety.
Absolutely. Bill, truck driving in the state of Washington. Welcome to the show. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Hey, Spencer. Look, I spent 25 years in the Army, and I have lived on every continent with the exception of Antarctica. But when I got back to the States, you know, I wanted to kiss the ground, you know. But here's the thing. I read an article about how America is really 11 different countries. I was like, 11? There's no way. So I read the article, and I'm like, well, this is pretty accurate, you know. And I was recently driving in California, and I saw a sign that said, it was in Pomona. It said, illegal to give money to panhandlers. And then it had a code, like a ordinance code underneath there.
Jeez.
And I was like, wow, I live in Seattle where there's a lot of panhandlers. I mean, we couldn't even have that policy there. It would be impossible. We couldn't have it. So anyways, it got me thinking. It also got me thinking of when I drove an Uber. I had to drive an Uber cab or ride with an Uber driver in St. George, Utah. And I told him I would like to move there. I was only thinking about the scenery, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Only the beautiful scenery. And he said, oh, we have a lot of homeless people moving in here. I was like, oh, my gosh, this guy thinks I'm homeless, you know. And I had to explain to him. I'm like, no, I live in Seattle. I have a house. You know, it's, you know, and I explained it to him. But the thing is, I mean, here's my main point. How much of this is really the way we deal with the homeless and the way we deal with crime and policing? How much of this do you think is cultural, depending on what area of America you're in? And would you appreciate some sort of study into that?
Well, I think there's a lot. First off, Bill, 25 years of service in the Army. I'm also an Army guy myself. Thank you for your service. Really appreciate your service to our nation. And second thing is, I think what you see, despite homeless ordinances or what have you, is that so much of government policy is about reacting to the concern and not preventing the concern. You know, one of the things about the safety trap is that, you know, if you take like school shootings, for example, you have, you know, that bad thing that happens. And then, you know, there's this dynamic shift from the community, from complacency to hypervigilance. And the politicians come out and promote their plan, and pundits cry for change, and the students rally for reform. But nothing really gets done. And the news cycle moves on, and normalcy returns, and complacency gets us back to feeling comfortable. And then something else breaks bad, and our fears have abated, and risk remains, and we're ensnared once more in the safety trap. So whether it be panhandling or no solicitation or homeless or gun crimes or mental health or what have you, I think we really need to be focused more on preventing these risks before they escalate into reality, rather than
making sure that the police have better tactical gear and the fire trucks have bigger engines and the ambulances, you know, are more well-stocked to respond to the crisis rather than preventing the crisis from occurring in the first place.
Final calls here, Jeremy in Jamestown, North Dakota. Jeremy, go ahead.
Hey, George, Spencer. I have the safety of a vehicle to alert people about.
Tell us about that.
I fell for a false advertising that a vehicle I bought had a 5-star crash test rating. And I was heading up an icy hill.
Oh, this is that accident of yours. Oh.
Yep.
You got duped.
I was heading up an icy hill. Then all of a sudden, a Ford pickup started to slide down the hill at me. I went clear over to my shoulder. And then the pickup went clear across my lane and hit me head on my shoulder. And at about 25 miles an hour, the airbag and seatbelt in my Rio did not work at all. Immediately, I was in a coma for 2.5 months. When I woke up from the coma, they told me I broke both femurs, shattered both kneecaps, broke a foot, almost got my left pinky cut off.
I mean, you're lucky, Jeremy, that you're still alive, my friend. You're still alive.
Absolutely.
I guess safety also includes being careful what you buy, Spencer, doesn't it?
It does, and I think that's, you know, one of those things where, you know, trust but verify. It's always good to, whether you're buying a car or going for a surgery, it's always good to get a second opinion.
So many people are impulsive when they buy things. How come?
Well, because we are by creature, our DNA, we make, I would say on any given day, 90% of our decisions are based in emotion rather than logic. I always ask people to look at their phones and look at the last text message response that they gave, and could they have framed that message better had they just taken the time to think about what they wanted to say. But we are in an age of instant gratification. We are much more focused on playing checkers than we are on playing chess. But sometimes just taking that pause and looking at the big picture and making the most informed decision we can will help to, you know, ensure the outcome that we hope to be achieved.
You said at the beginning of the program that people are stressed to the max because of COVID and what's been happening and being, you know, confined and everything else. It's a tense situation for a lot of people, isn't it?
It is. And I think one of the reasons our anxiety is so high about our inability to keep ourselves and our loved ones safe is because our understanding of what it means to be safe is at an all-time low. And I really hope that the easy to read, come for the lesson, you know, come for the story, stay for the lesson, digestible nature of this book can really be the framework of a new understanding that can help usher in a safer day for all of us.
I think so too. Spencer, thank you again. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your work. And keep in touch with us. This was your first time on the show. You did a great job.
George, thank you so much for having me. This was a true pleasure. Thank you to you. Thank you to your audience. Thank you to your team. I can't wait to come back.
Great. Spencer Corson and his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, two special guests, Ross Allison, David Weatherly, Haunted Prisons on Coast to Coast AM.